everyone, welcome to the Weird World Podcast. And if you're like me, you have forgotten part one of this episode.
Okay, I'll do a recap.
Yeah,
I knew. I'm Dean, by the way.
And I'm Carrie. I don't need a recap, but...
Yeah, you do.
I mean, now I remember.
You for sure do.
But I probably do need a recap.
Okay, we did it. We recorded part one 1 week ago, and Carrie's like, wait, who is Dorothy Arnold? So that's not a good sign.
Was it only a week ago?
Yeah, it was.
Huh. All right. A lot has happened. It's been a busy week.
Okay, so... You might remember from part one, we talked about how 13,000 people every year go missing in New York City. One of those was a rich socialite named Dorothy Arnold. Hers was very strange because she was out shopping in Manhattan, middle of the day, 2 o'clock, 5th Avenue, super safe, ritzy area, chatted with a friend, said goodbye, started out toward Central Park, toward her house, into oblivion. She's never been seen again. This happened in 1910, which makes her case the oldest active missing person case in New York City. It's been well over a century, obviously.
How active is it really?
It's probably not very active,
They're
but it's on the books.
Not really looking very hard for her at this point.
Probably not. But, you know, it's literally on the books in this Missing Persons Bureau of New York City. It's still on the books. So we went through her life a little bit, talked about, you know, her background. You remember from part one. Carrie doesn't.
I do, and I have theories, and I even remember what they are.
Oh, that's probably a good sign.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up with kind of, you know, the half-assed investigation by the family where they seemed more concerned about scandal than they did about finding their daughter.
Yeah.
They first had a young lawyer look around for her. Then he couldn't find her, so they had the Pinkertons. The Pinkertons urged the Francis Arnold, the father of the family, a very wealthy importer of fine goods like French perfumes. He finally went to the police. The police went public. He went public. It became just a huge story, international, national. I mean, so I saw one article has a bunch of headlines from literally all over the country.
Yeah.
Just every, you know, the Helena Gazette in Montana had the top of the line head story was about this missing girl in New York City. So it was a huge story.
From the well-known city, Helena, Montana.
Is it Helena? Well, I've heard of
it. I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. If it's Helena.
Helena.
I don't know. Helena?
From Orphan Black.
Maybe. I think that's what it's named after in a weird time kind of way. So we ended up by talking about how Dorothy was this, you know, she wanted to be a writer, but she was sort of innocent and pure, hadn't been married yet. Turns out, no, she had a beau. His name was George Griscom Jr., and in fact, she had spent an illicit week with him in Boston in a hotel, unknown to her family. They found out through a pawnbroker. They found out about George. He suddenly became public. His name was splashed all over the headlines as well, and he really is where we start with. He became kind of, you know, the first initial suspect.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure all of that would be scandalous for the time. She's 25 years
She's
old.
25-year-old grown-up woman.
Was that guy married?
No,
or was he not married?
He was not married.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. So big whoop.
It was an absolute.
I know.
Whoop. Different time. I know, but it was huge. It was very scandalous. Remember, that's one of the reasons it was a 13-year-old girl at the time. About a year before, had run off and met a man also, and it kind of almost ruined this wealthy family in New York. The scandal, it really set them back. So they were terrified of this happening to them.
Yeah.
I know. Well,
it just makes me roll my eyes.
As you just did. I can attest, audience, Carrie did indeed just roll her eyes.
Can I ask you a question about the investigation?
Sure.
Or about Dorothy?
Let's see if I know.
Do we know, had she been spending her allowance? Like, was she a saver? Do we think she socked away some money?
I don't know. We know that she did have some of her allowance
a lot of money.
Left. It was $100 a month that she got, which, as we know, was $7 trillion in today's money. Now, how much
around
was it?
Around $3,000.
Yeah. $3,300, okay. So, but, you know, we know she socialized with friends. Remember, she had just had an expensive lunch and matinee the day before. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like, you think they would have found that out, like, you know, she had never was, you know,
not
spending any of her money. I don't know. That's a long way of saying I don't know the answer to it. That's a good question, though.
I know.
So first, remember those letters that John Keith, the young lawyer, had found in Dorothy's desk in her bedroom when they first started the investigation through that guy? Some of the letters were from this guy named Junior Griscom, George Griscom. And they clearly demonstrated that they were not just friends. They were more than just friends.
Right.
So Griscom was really this very unlikely paramour for Dorothy because she's 25. She's reasonably attractive. Again, she was very rich, really well-connected family, New York City family. This guy was 42 years old. He was from Pittsburgh, a well-to-do family, but still a family in Pittsburgh, so not super convenient. He was also kind of chubby, thinning hair. He was decidedly not a catch.
Really?
Yeah. He was not an attractive, good-looking guy. We'll have
voluntarily went by Junior, and
he didn't voluntarily go by Junior. He insisted people call him Junior. Yeah,
and didn't really work, right? Just his family.
He was an engineer, but he lived completely off his family. He did, I'm going to say, though, for his appearance, he did sport some very fashionable sideburns. So let's give him one in his favor. But yeah, he was this 42-year-old quasi-engineer who lived with his family. When his family, you know, went off to summer in Nantucket, where they had a summer home, Junior followed. When he sort of followed his mom around all the time. He's kind of a classic mama's boy. And so when they went overseas, he went with them. They would, you know, travel around the European hotspots. Junior always tagged along. Allegedly, his mother still picked out his shirts and ties for him and bought them for him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that tells you a little bit about George
Junior
Griscom. So a weird relationship, but I think she was desperate for anybody to get the hell out.
Yeah.
From under the thumb of her family.
I think given her position in society, she would not have had difficulty finding somebody.
You would think. And someone at least on a little higher plane than Junior. So the Arnolds found out about her adventure in Boston with Griscom from the pond, Jules. And it was all of the newspapers. And the newspapers were talking about her week-long illicit getaway with this dumpy guy from Pittsburgh. So Francis and Mary they knew about him. Let me rephrase that. They knew about him about when it happened. So before she went missing, right? Because they found out from that she had pawned some jewelry.
Okay.
So the media found out when that pawnbroker remembered her, but they found out somehow that I guess she probably was just missing some jewelry
personally. Yeah.
And they found out about Griscom a few months before she went missing, and they didn't like him.
Right.
When the father made that statement about, I'm okay with her dating, just not, people who don't do anything.
Right.
That's exactly who they meant. They
clearly
meant him. So they didn't like him. He seemed like he was, kind of a third rater, which he really was. And she's a prize plum or belle of the ball for sure. At least that's how they view her. Yeah. They're almost like royalty. They probably wanted her to marry into another fashionable, well-to-do New York family. And he was none of those things. They saw him as a very unappealing catch for their daughter. It didn't help, by the way. He also had a minor scandal in his past because he had broken off an engagement with a different rich heiress just a few months before.
Oh.
So they just didn't, so the family says, hey, he's unsuitable for you. We forbid you to see him again. It's probably unnecessary for me to say that, of course. What does she do? Continue to see him. Or at the very least, through letters. They didn't seem to have met very often after that because it wasn't that long before she went missing, but they wrote a lot of letters to each other. So she continued the relationship to some degree. And it was in November of 1910, about a month before she went missing, that the last time they saw each other, Junior came with his family naturally to New York to set sail for Europe. And they met in New York City sometime in November before he left.
Okay.
So Griscom, of course, wouldn't fall under any kind of public scrutiny for, a couple months, I guess, because it took the media to find out about it. Notice that, too, by the way. The family knew about Griscom. But,
didn't say anything.
Didn't say anything to the Pinkertons. They suspected probably right away, I think, that, remember that she had those little packets of information about ocean liners, transatlantic ships. They probably suspected that she was going to meet Griscom.
Right.
I think pretty early on.
I suspect that as well.
Yeah. So he was kind of the center of the early private searches. They tracked him down and they found out his family was in Florence at the time. So on December 16th, they telegrammed him in Florence. So less than a week after Dorothy vanished. And they said, basically, do you know anything about this? Dorothy's gone. Where is she? Griscom returned telegram. And he said, not only, I don't know what you're talking about, I didn't even know she was missing. That's the first I've heard about that. So not surprisingly, the Arnolds are not super trusting of him.
Okay, good.
So, which is good. Okay, so Frances went to the media at this point. It was in January, I think. Now, she's been missing for maybe less than a month, but sometime in early January, Frances, the father, and dad, Dorothy's father, went to the media and said, "My wife is so stressed out by what's happening that she's gone off to a sanitarium in New Jersey. She's going to lay low there. That's why you don't see her at home." That was not true. Secretly, she and oldest son, John, Dorothy's oldest brother,
went to Italy.
They sailed off in January 1911. They're going to track down George Griscom and confront him face to face. So mother and son did exactly that.
Good for them.
They found him in Florence at the Anglo-American Hotel. I'm sure you've stayed there. Have you been in Florence? Did you go to Florence?
Yes, I did.
And you probably stayed at the Anglo-American Hotel. How was it? Do you?
No idea where we stayed.
Very nice, sweet.
Probably not where wealthy people could afford.
Yeah, that's probably true. They found him and they confronted him on January 16th. I don't know, how long did it take back in those days? By then, it probably just took a few days to get to Europe, wouldn't you think? This is January of 1911.
A few days?
I didn't think the Titanic was doing that a similar.
No, I would think it would take a couple weeks, wouldn't it?
Really? That long?
I don't know.
Okay, whatever it took. They got there. I was just curious. They got there on January 16th. And so they went up and found him in a hotel. And Griscom said, "I don't know what you're talking about. I have no knowledge of Dorothy. You can see she's not here. I'm not hiding her away. She's not in Florence. If she's in Europe, I don't know anything about it." And he said, "By the way, I'm still in love with her. You know, I'm not out of the picture." John Arnold, he was the brother, he's going to go, he's like the deaf guy. He's like, "Oh, you ruffian, you cud." So he apparently like threatened him.
Yeah.
Possibly even fisticuffs. Marquis of Queensbury rules for sure. They got Griscom to give them all of Dorothy's letters. At least he had a packet of letters with him. He carried around with him. I guess he did. In his
breast pocket.
I swear to God, they kept so much shit in their pockets and things
like
that.
That's weird.
It's shy, including letters and things like that.
Yeah.
I've read so many books where, you know, I love the late 19th century English mysteries, things like that, or early 20th century. And it's amazing how much crap they had on them. And they literally would have letters with them and things like that.
Yeah.
Nuts. So I know they had big jackets and stuff like that, lots of pockets, but Jesus.
I was just joking. But
he did. He had a packet of letters with him. Why would you bring that?
I don't know. Home. Yeah.
It's weird. So he gave mom, Mary, and John the letters. And when the media found out about it, when the newspapers did, there was one story that wrote that Junior, that Junior Griscom had been, quote, "licked by young Arnold in a foreign hotel," unquote. Ooh. So he maybe roughed him up a little bit. Who knows? John got the letters. They took him home. They read them. John would later tell the press that they didn't tell us anything at all, and we burned them. I don't know. So take that as you will.
Wow.
But the family was not rid of Junior. So he gets home. He comes back from Europe just, I think, in February, about a month later or so, and he goes to the press. He came a little bit of a press hog. He goes to the press and he loudly proclaims that, "Hey, I'm in love with Dorothy. She's in love with me. I'm going to marry her. That is, if her mom says it's okay, I vow to marry her." He knew damn well.
They were going to
marry like the next day. He says, "Absolutely not. Yeah. I forbid it." He's just like, "I tried."
Yeah.
I don't know. Pretty sure he might have been gay.
Why?
Because he's 42. He's never been married. Every relationship he kind of breaks off. I think he was trying very hard to please his mom. "Oh, you must get married. Oh, son, you must give me a grandchild." That kind of thing. Sounds just like her, I assume. And so I think he was in the closet. Feel bad for him. It's a theory, Carrie.
What about their hotel tryst? That
was him trying so hard, and it just didn't go well. Apparently, their relationship was actually, according to friends later on, their relationship was kind of failing, kind of faltering at least. So we'll see. To his credit, Griscom did spend thousands of dollars, probably his parents' money, putting ads in major newspapers all across the country. you know, trying to get information from about Dorothy, asking for if anybody has seen her. I'm sure he did the whole detailed description like all the others did. He even addressed some of them to Dorothy. Like, Dorothy, if you read this, please come home. All is forgiven. I'm begging you, kind of a thing. So now, was it a pretense? Was he just, you know,
I don't know.
We'll talk about that in theories. We'll see what you think. So tons of speculations just are flooding at this point. And this is, she's been missing now for over 2 months. It's a huge story. And the newspapers at the time would just print anything. It's zero. It's kind of like it's come back to that again.
Yeah.
For a while there, the media would try to objectively prove something was true, or at least get indications, you know, with multiple sources, something's true. At this point, not really. So there's still kind of the yellow journalism a little bit. So people were saying that Dorothy had gone back to Boston and lost her memory, that she, her body was fished out of the East River. There was articles that said Dorothy's body's found, or there's articles that said Dorothy's come home. Not true. They said she was seen in like Chicago, Richmond, Los Angeles. Friends of hers in Atlantic City said, oh, she telegrammed us and she's fine and we know where she is. And it was just, these are all fake stories. She was living in a sanitarium in Philadelphia. Not true.
Yeah.
So the New York Police Department seems to have been really skeptical all the time. Have you kind of sensed that from them, from their reaction? It feels like they felt Dorothy had done this to herself from day one.
Right.
I think they thought that the family knew about it and were kind of leading them on a wild goose chase. Yeah. They were not happy.
It does seem that way by the family's reaction, you know.
I know.
Scandal aversion,
yeah,
you know, or not.
I think they thought she had run off.
Yeah.
Her family knew it. And like, you're wasting her resources. So they actually went in late January, the New York, the Missing Persons Bureau or the New York PD went to the press and said, basically words to the effect of, hey, we know Dorothy's alive and she can come home if she wanted to.
Yeah.
And the family was upset about that. The Arnold still said, no, that's absolutely not true. Francis still was saying, no, she's dead. She was killed in Central Park. They dumped her body in the reservoir. He stuck to that story for pretty much the rest of his life.
But did they ever search the reservoir?
They did. So, in fact, at this time, it's really weird. Francis just very weirdly, obliquely cites, he says, I have two pieces of evidence that prove that she'd been mugged, that Dorothy had been mugged and tossed into the Central Park Reservoir. I can't divulge them, though. That's weird.
That's dumb.
And my guess is he really believed it. And I don't know what that, who knows? Somebody brought him, you know, here's a scrap. Oh my God, that's from her dress. It's a Navy Surge, you know, something like that. Because the police thought that
what's a Navy Surge?
A Surge dress. She had a Surge. It's a material. S-E-R-G-E. Navy blue is the color. That's what she was wearing on the day she disappeared.
I don't know what a Surge dress is.
Oh, isn't that a thing? That material? You've never heard of that material? I feel like I've heard of the material. And I'm positive you've heard of more material.
I mean, a serger is a...
That's how it's spelled.
It's kind of like a sewing machine. It's a certain stitch that they do on seams. One of the things said
she had a navy colored serge dress.
Huh. Don't ask me. I'm going to have to look it up.
I did not think to not believe that that was a material. I am shocked.
Well, it probably is.
Okay.
I don't know everything about
textiles
from the early 20th century.
I feel like you do. I feel like you're an expert on those kinds of things. So the police thought that Francis was kind of an idiot. Because they said, hey, remember the temperature on the day she went
very
missing?
Cold.
It was 21 degrees high.
Yeah.
The reservoir was frozen solid.
Oh, so that's right.
She can't have been dumped in the reservoir dum-dum. And so they said, okay, fine. You know what? So spring, it thawed. We'll check it out. They dragged it.
Yeah.
For any sign of her. They had already searched, by the way. They searched Central Park as soon as they found out. They searched anywhere for any sign of her. Found nothing. When spring thawed, they dragged the reservoir, and there's also, I think, I guess there was a small lake in Central Park at the time. They dragged them both. Nobody.
Yeah.
So they, again, I think that added to their suspicion, like, you're not that dumb. You don't really think that, but you keep saying that. What's going on here? Tons of calls came into the NYPD from that circular they sent. I think I mentioned they had this crazy detailed description of her, for the earrings and everything else. And her Navy Surge dress. You didn't catch it the first time. I think I mentioned it. So, I mean, anything remotely serious, the NYPD tracked down that lead and they found it to be baseless. They all were. The Arnold family was sent at least two ransom notes that they talked about, one of which said, hey, we have her, give us 5,000 bucks. They both were, of course, hoaxes.
Yeah.
Lowlifes trying to take advantage of grief. Every prominent case like this brings out scum of the earth like that. A postcard arrived at the Arnold family home in February of 1911, and it was postmarked in the city of New York, and it said simply three words, I am safe, and then signed Dorothy. Francis admitted that the handwriting did look a little bit like his daughter's, but there had been handwriting samples published in the newspapers, and he was immediately said, this is a hoax. This is not real. Someone's trying to take advantage of it.
Why would they have printed handwriting samples?
I don't know, but multiple sources I read said that her handwriting was publicly available through the newspapers. Maybe they might have showed some of the letters. I don't know. I'm guessing. They might have shown some of the letters that she wrote. Well, yeah. Well, it was.
I mean, they must not have been provided by the police or the family, but.
No. Well, they could have been provided by the family. They could have been provided by George, but presumably he had some of her letters also. Yeah. Our friends had her letters. And the media would have gotten something from people. They were, I'm sure they were talking to everybody who knew her.
Yeah.
So we're still in February. A jeweler in San Francisco said he had been visited by a woman that he says, in hindsight, she looked just like Dorothy. This had been on January 7th, 1911. So less than a month after she went missing, this jeweler said she walked into my store in San Francisco. The woman asked him to engrave a diamond wedding ring with an inscription that said, to AJA from ERB, December 10, 1910. That's the day she went missing. He apparently thought, oh, that was her. How he got Dorothy Harriet Camille Arnold from AJA, I don't know. It doesn't seem...
No.
So, the story was taken seriously. It created some headlines for a while. The police, checked into it, but nothing came of it. But, to AJA would have been her if she had it, right? From ERB, which, by the way, is not Griscom, but still.
Yeah.
But AJA, if it had said DCA or something like that, fine. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are the kinds of stories that were coming out and getting huge, huge, huge attention, too. So not long after this, the police said that, you know what? We're done with the case. That's it. We agree with Francis that Dorothy must be dead. I think they just wanted to be rid of it. They said, quote, that now seems the only reasonable way of looking at the case. And that was the deputy commissioner of the NYPD, William J. Flynn. Continue his quote. The girl has now been missing for 75 days. And all that time, not a single clue has been found that was worth the name. We have no evidence that a crime has been committed. And the case is now one of a missing person and nothing more. Police continue to investigate reports of sightings, but none led to Arnold. That last part was not a quote. All right, but anyway, so they were just wiping their hands and showing them to the camera above them in the casino because they were absolutely done with the case. And again, I think that was motivated. Like, okay, you wanted to be dead? She's dead. We're done. We're not going to spend any more time on this.
Yeah.
The family, though, did not give up their searches. By April, I don't know how they know this, but someone estimated they had spent $100,000 in trying to look for Dorothy. That's a staggering $3.3 million.
Who did?
The family.
Oh, okay.
You know, remember they're traveling to Europe. They're sending out all kinds of opening kinds of ads. They're hiring the Pinkertons. They presumably pay John Keith.
Sounds like a lot of money.
Seems like a lot of money. Yeah. I know it. So who knows if they really spent that much, but they did. You know, so if the dad really was that positive she was dead, I don't think that doesn't make any sense. They spend $3 million or even approaching that looking for her if they really thought she was dead. Obviously, they'd never found any trace of her. So we get to the obvious part. What happened to Dorothy Arnold?
Yeah.
21 degree day in New York City, December 1911. There are some possibilities. Let's start with the most, I don't know, mundane's not the word, but the most, I guess... Well, tell me what you think. How about amnesia?
No.
It's an icy cold day. She's walking on these icy, slippery sidewalks. Does she have a bad step in her, I'm going to say, high-laced heels? I'm guessing. I forgot what her shoes looked like from the circular. And she slammed her head on the sidewalk. You know, a pedestrian helps her up. She rubs her head. She's super embarrassed. More embarrassed almost than hurt. And then she quickly makes excuses and goes on her way. But unfortunately for her, the concussion kind of sets in later, and she gets fuzzy, and then she realizes, wait, where am I going? Wait a second. Who am I? And she wanders off in a fugue state.
And? Disappears. No money. Very well dressed.
Very well dressed.
If some good Samaritan finds her and puts her up, they go to the police or they go to the media.
How about if she was unconscious and she laid on the sidewalk for minutes and they finally took her and we don't know who she is. She doesn't have any ID on her. And they say, okay, well, we need to take her to the nearest hospital. So it's a hospital case. So they take her to the hospital. And then when she regains consciousness in the hospital now, she has no memory. What do you think?
The hospital would notify the police.
They took her to a poorhouse, and that's where she lived for the rest of her life. If they had poorhouses still in New York in 1911, I have no idea.
I don't think they did.
Hmm.
So you know, also, if she gets taken to this fictional poorhouse, she's clearly not a poor person the way she's dressed.
No.
So they would call the police.
Sadly, you're probably like, probably right, because I love the idea of fugue states, even though if they had to live in them, it'd be horrific.
Yeah, but none of those scenarios are plausible.
Yeah.
Because then also, say somebody just helped her, and she says, oh, I'm fine, and she goes along her way. When it's publicized that this wealthy young woman is missing, they would most likely remember it.
It was 6 weeks. Yeah, you're right. Unless, most likely, not for sure, though.
Unless they're a tourist, but it quickly becomes national news.
Yes. It had been 6 weeks, though, before that happened.
Some people don't
pay
attention, but...
So maybe it's just forgotten by that. Or it's just somebody who didn't read the papers, whatever.
It's possible, but my feeling is, no matter what the scenario is, she would have come across people.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line.
Okay.
Possibly, and most likely, multiple people. Taxi drivers, you know... The person that takes your ticket on the gangplank going up to the cruise ship, porters on trains and boats, and
the poorhouse operator of a poorhouse.
Anybody, if she was trying to escape.
Yes.
So that's all of this.
We're not trying to escape. This is amnesia. We'll do escape in a minute.
Any scenario.
Well, let's do one at a time. Otherwise, we're going to
end
the podcast.
Especially the innocent part where she's. Has some mishap.
Yes.
I don't think that's possible.
John Keith, remember, started looking for her like 2 days later. He was checking all the hospitals and things like that.
Yeah.
She was dressed, as you said, with obvious wealth. Someone would have taken her. No, you know, if the hospital had her, she would have been noticed.
Yeah.
If anything, like if the police would have been involved, obviously they would have noticed. You know, obviously she didn't live out the rest of her life in a fugue state. Someone would have noticed her because she would have been in New York City. She wouldn't have lived in New York City. She was. You know, and 6 weeks later, she was plastered all over the place. She's the talk of town. Remember, there's even that $1,000 reward.
Uh-huh.
So certainly people would have brought it. So, yes, that's probably not true. But about 2 months after Dorothy disappeared, there's a tip that came in. John Keith got it that Dorothy was housed in a sanatorium. I don't know the difference.
Yeah, I don't either.
With you, in or near Pittsburgh. That's where Griscom was from. So he took that seriously at that time.
Yeah.
And he went, I think I've heard, with two detectives. I don't know if they meant private detectives or police detectives.
Yeah.
But Keith and two detectives traveled to Pittsburgh. They went to that sanatorium. They checked out the woman who's being held, who's supposedly Dorothy. And it was not Dorothy. So there was, even contemporaneously, there was a hint that there was something like that. Like, if she's in a sanatorium, does she lose? But how'd she get to Pittsburgh? Who knows? They didn't know, but they... If it hadn't been Pittsburgh, I wonder if they would have taken it so seriously, but they did. They at least enough to go down there and look into it. So I'm only including this, by the way, because the amnesia thing is included in all the things you read. I think a lot of people who write these up think you have to have a quota for lots of theories, and you don't. This one's nonsensical. She for sure did not have amnesia.
Yeah.
But she may have got, as Jessica Fletcher would say, an abortion. How about that? That was a much more plausible theory. And it was a favorite at the time of the media.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought it was not uncommon. So this the idea. Remember, it was the mystery of Mary Roget, or Mary Rogers, how he wrote it up, whatever. was Edgar Allan Poe thought it was a botched abortion and she was killed. So did Junia Griscom or some other lover maybe get her pregnant? She goes for a back alley abortion. It goes horribly wrong. The body has to be disposed of because it's a crime. Now it's a worse crime. So they whatever, burn it, bury it, dump it in the river or the sea, and it's never found again. I mean, you know, that's interesting plausible. Speculation. What do you think of that?
Very plausible.
In April 1916, there was an abortion clinic in Bellevue, Pennsylvania, only a few miles from Pittsburgh, and the police raided it. It was called the House of Mystery, and it was well known what they did there.
Yeah,
it was fairly well known what they did there. It was an abortion clinic. It was run by this renegade doctor named C.C. Meredith. So it's raided. It was super notorious. It was said that many young women went there, but some never came out of this Meredith's, you know, of this House of Mystery. So this led the police to arrest Meredith. At the time, a colleague of his named Dr. H.E. Lutz told the New York District Attorney that Meredith had admitted to him, Lutz, that Dorothy Arnold had sought his specific type of help back in 1911. Or I guess it could have been end of 1910. Maybe this is 1916 when this is said. The procedure went wrong, of course. She died. Like on all the other victims, what they did at this place was they burned the body in a basement furnace, which was in part for that exact reason.
Wow.
Because they had, you know, these are, this is what happens when you don't make abortion legal and safe.
Yep.
These things happen. So.
And these things happen today.
Yes. And so the district attorney of New York, he believed this guy and that has happened. And so you wonder if this was one of the things the New York Police Department was thinking about back in 1911, that, you know, the family knows that she had an abortion and was killed.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're wasting our time. I don't know. But Francis said publicly when this became public in 1916, he said, no, he called it ridiculous and absolutely untrue. And obviously he would say that even if he knew it was true. So, you know, it is, like I said, plausible.
Yeah.
There was another variation on this. Okay, listen to this story. This is also in April 1916. This small-time criminal named Edward Glenoris, he's in the Rhode Island State Penitentiary. He makes a claim. He tells the warden initially, and the warden told other authorities after that. He said that back in December of 1910, this fellow third-rate criminal named Little Louis offered him $250 for a shady job. Glenoris was to pick up a woman from a private home in New Rochelle. It's in New York. It's a town. It's just north of New York City, not far at all.
Uh-huh.
And he was supposed to drive her up to West Point. That's, of course, the home of the Army, the Military Academy. It's about 50 miles up the Hudson River Valley from New Rochelle. There, they met two men. One was named Doc, and the other was unnamed, but he was very well dressed. And Glenoris would later say that he looked like Junior Griscom to him. The men carried this kind of semi-conscious or really kind of unconscious woman from the house in West Point, and they, you know, they bundle it into the back of the car that Glenoris is driving, and there they drive all the way down to Weehawken, New Jersey, about 57 miles away. It's right across the Lincoln Tunnel from Manhattan, so it's that part of northeast New Jersey is right across from the city, but still, they went all the way up from north of New York, all the way up to West Point, came all the way down, continued on, and went into New Jersey in this weird trip. And so they're in Weehawken, and or they're on their way to Weehawken. During that, Little Louis tells Glenoris that, hey, that unconscious woman back there, that's Dorothy Arnold. Glenoris said he also saw a signet ring on the woman's finger that would match the one he later saw in that circular, presumably back in 1911 when it was released.
Right.
And I remember it was sort of minutely described back in that circular. He drops her off on Weehawken, drops the girl and the other guy's people's off, and that's it. He goes home. He's in New York somewhere. And the next day, Little Louis says, hey, we need you back here. You got to, quote, finish the job. So when Glenoris gets his way back to Weehawken, Doc is there, and he said, that unconscious woman that you drove yesterday? Yeah, she died. We were conducting an operation on her. Clearly, it was an abortion. Glenoris and Louis then took the body, packed her away, bundled it into the car, and they drove her back to that first house in New Rochelle that they had first picked her up. And they wrapped her in a sheet and they buried her in the cellar of that house in New Rochelle, New York.
Okay.
That's the story. That earned him his $250 apparently, which would be $8,000 today. But remember, if you follow his story, it was initially just going to be, you're going to pick up a woman and drive her down to Weehawken for an abortion. That's it.
Yeah.
$8,000 for that kind of, that much, that driving, that seems like a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
When was this story relayed?
1916. So.
Oh, so it's only 5 years later.
5 years later, yeah.
Could they not go look for this buried body?
So, you know, they couldn't, I don't think they were able to identify little Louie or Doc. It also seems like, wait, before we talk about that, doesn't it seem like, why? What's he needed for? Can they drive cars? Can they take an unconscious woman who's alone into the thing? What exactly is he useful for here?
Yeah.
And would they tell him who this unconscious woman was? Dorothy Arnold was not a celebrity until she went missing. Who cares?
Right.
He's never going to know who Dorothy Arnold is. Like, hey, because over the back, someone you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And could he really remember a signet ring? Why is he? I thought he's driving. Yeah. How are you looking back at this body crumpled in the back of a car? Presumably it's dark and seeing a signet ring. That doesn't make it. Maybe when he's carrying her, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, but still. Yeah. You're not going to remember a signet ring, you know, even weeks later, let alone 5 years later. And then why didn't you go and get the reward for $1,000 back at the time? Why did he keep quiet for 5 years? So I don't know. I mean, maybe to avoid anything criminal.
Yeah.
Yes. The problem also is in later retellings, Glenorris, he just got more and more confused under questioning. It was like they're, you know, they always trying to pin him down, and his story started changing, of course, not shockingly. Eventually, he says, what? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who Dorothy Arnold is. So he caved.
So probably not true.
Police did go to the New Rochelle home the other way, and they dug up the cellar.
Wow.
And they found nothing. So they took it seriously 5 years later.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Again, Francis Arnold again called that story utter nonsense, and it clearly was. Whether I don't know if he was deranged or he was hunting for some reward money later on, but Glenora's story was for sure some kind of invention. So we can forget that one. How about, though, suicide?
Yeah, I was thinking that one too.
Yeah, a lot of people are. It's way more realistic again. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, though. Glenora's was full of shit, but the possibility that she did indeed have a botched abortion
still exists.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She didn't seem like she would have been suicidal, but we only know what.
Well, it's another like the abortion theory, it at least could explain potentially the lack of a body. That's the biggest thing here is what happened to her body if she did die sometime around when she went missing, because they're searching for it. The abortion one makes more sense from that in that sense than suicide does.
Yeah.
But it's possible you jump off a bridge and your body doesn't wash up or something like that. So there is a little bit of logic behind suicide as well. A little more even though, when even Junior Griscom, he said that was what he thought happened. He thought she killed herself.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So he said that when she got that second rejection, she was crushed. She was really sad. From the short story she sent to McClure's magazine, and which, by the way, only consisted of two rejected stories to one of the most prominent magazines around.
Yeah.
But he said she was really, really just real bummed about it. And then the relentless teasing she got for the second one from her family really just made it worse.
Yeah.
In terms of proof, though, there was one of the letters that the family retrieved from Griscom, remember, in Europe, that was written by Dorothy. Apparently it said, quote, McClure's has turned me down. Failure stares me in the face. All I see ahead is a long road with no turning. And then you have the next passage, which is kind of worrisome. Quote, mother will always think an accident has happened. End quote.
Huh.
That was a letter she had written to Griscom. That does sound a little ominous, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Other people in Dorothy's orbit, friends of hers, said that she had been pretty sad about the rejections, but also she had been sad about the relationship with Griscom, which they said was kind of faltering.
Yeah.
It was on the outs. And then the media dug up the story about Griscom's cousin. He had a cousin named Andrew who had kind of done something similar. He had fallen in love with an English governess And he was forbidden by his family to marry this English governess. She's beneath him.
Right.
So he got a ticket to a transatlantic ocean liner, and he threw himself off the ocean liner and killed himself in the water. Yeah. So the media says, did she know about this because of her socialization with Griscom? He told the story of his cousin, and she got the idea. That's how I'll do it. And so did she jump off a boat?
Wow. And maybe.
Well, the problem is, remember the Pinkertons?
No, but they know she was on the boat.
Yeah, somebody would know if, she was unless on the boat. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's possible, but she was, I don't know. The Pinkertons were searching a few weeks after she went missing. They were talking to all those liners. It's possible that she'd used a fake name somehow, paid cash, I don't know.
Yeah.
And done it. It's not impossible, but they had checked into those liners and they had no record or indication that she had ever been on one of theirs.
Yeah.
There is, though, this. Like fairies or this one other, you know, there's like night fairies that would travel off of New York City and they didn't take names or anything like right. that. You just paid, yeah. you got your ticket and went on. So some people think maybe she did one of those and just quietly slipped into the river or the ocean and disappeared. I don't know. And you know, it's not impossible she could have used a fake name. So I think that should be taken somewhat seriously. But bodies typically, if it was a fairy, which doesn't take tickets or names, typically the body's washed up on the shore of New Jersey or New York. So, but I guess not 100% of the time, I'm sure. If she did commit suicide, then she told absolutely no one, not even Junior, that what she was going to do. Most everyone around her said that, she'd been sad about her writing prospects, but she was happy and normal otherwise. She didn't seem any different. Remember, all the people who saw her the day of, said she, including her mom and her friend Gladys, said she seemed completely fine. I mean, you could put on a brave face.
Well, and if her seeming fine was her normal state, then I would say she wasn't suicidal. If she had seemed very down, very depressed, and then all of a sudden she seems like, she's normal again. Yeah. She's happy. She's going out shopping. That could be a sign that she was suicidal, because lots of times once people finalize their plan, they act happy because that they have some relief because they know what they're going to do.
So it's 2 o'clock. She's got her chocolate and her book.
But it doesn't seem that way for her.
Half a pound of chocolates and her book and her voluminous muff.
Yeah.
And she walks off towards Central Park to the north.
Yeah.
Going home. She then, waits for Gladys to be out of sight and then, boop, takes a sharp right to the port. I don't know.
Yeah.
She got a taxi, I suppose, to the port and took a boat or something like that. I don't know.
I want to think she's an evil genius and she planned her own departure and she just wanted to be away from her family permanently.
Yeah.
But she would have needed help.
That's next. So hold on. You're getting ahead of us.
Okay. Sorry.
So let's finish the suicide idea. There was... Again, there's no intimation of suicide to anyone, and if it was part of her plan to disappear, which we'll get to in a minute, everybody kept an amazing secret.
Yeah,
you know, kept the secret very, very well. I don't know. We'll see. Before we get to that, though, let's not forget Frances Arnold's favorite theory, which was murder. So kind of like suicide, but external, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did she really walk into Central Park and? Like she told her friend Gladys, I'm going to walk through Central Park on my way home. That ruffians there set upon her and kill her in a scuffle, or maybe along the same vein. Maybe she's attacked and abducted, maybe drugged, carried off somehow. Those things do happen sometime, even in that place. But we don't know. There's zero evidence for that. There's no positive evidence for that to have happened. You absolutely have to take it seriously as a possibility. But there's nothing to say, yes, we have any evidence that that was the thing that happened. There's no rumors, no confessions, no like, you know, hey, I heard Bob Johnson told that he murdered Dorothy Arnold. Didn't know who she was, but oh my God, she's famous and things like that.
And once the reward information comes out, people would have been talking.
And I don't know in 1911, but in 2 o'clock, is Central Park really... A lonely place
deserted.
Where this kind of thing can happen? I don't
know.
I don't think so. Quite the opposite, I would think.
No, especially in December.
Yeah.
People are out and about and they're shopping and they're, you know, buying the warm chestnuts.
And she would have, I don't know, we've been there a couple times, but she would have hugged along the side of it, along where she lived, because she lived on the east side.
Uh-huh.
She lived just a couple blocks off the east side of Central Park. So you think she would have, but no scream, no scuffle, no help. You know, help call the police, anything of that at all. Nothing like that happened. We know her body wasn't dumped in the reservoir of the lake. So if you did set upon her and kill her in Center Park, you then took the body out of Center Park into the city somehow?
Yeah.
To a car or something like that? Or even to a house?
We keep talking about cars. Did they have cars in 1910?
They had a few. Rarely, but probably not. It's just, but whatever. Some conveyance. Are you going to really carry this body of this?
Yeah, no, I don't.
Woman in a Navy serge dress. I don't think so. Navy serge, quite noticeable. So we know it wasn't dumped. We know it wasn't buried. So where did you take it? Where did you get rid of the body? Why would you take the body at all if you murdered her for her money?
Yeah.
If you abducted her, maybe some people like, oh, she's abducted and sold into prostitution. That's not likely. They didn't do that to famous people who had people who are going to look for you.
So who can speak.
Yeah.
And tell people who she is.
Even if she's taken to a different city, you still. So, but it's still a real possibility that she was. Maybe it was an early 20th century serial killer. I mean, honestly, why not?
Because she was?
No, she
oh,
was
a
killed
victim
by,
of.
She was, yes. She was killed by a serial killer. So that's someone, in other words, like, right, if it's a ruffian, they take her money, smack her around, and if they accidentally kill her, they leave her body there. But a serial killer would abduct her and get her out of there somehow and then, you know, hide the body the same way he hid his other victim's body. Mm. So if she was murdered, it wasn't muggers. It was something weirder. That's my thought.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think that a serial killer would target somebody that looked like her.
Oh, I don't know about that. Why? Why?
Because they, as we know, they tend to target people who won't immediately be missed as well. They look for poorly dressed people.
That's usually true.
Marginalized people.
His target was rich young ladies.
Well, then we'd know.
Yeah. Why would we know? That was the first one. It didn't go well. He stopped. It's my theory. It's the end of my theory.
I'm not.
Okay. You're not on board the serial
killer. I'm not signing on to the serial killer.
It's also kind of odd that, again, his dad did spend all this money if they were sure he was dead. So it feels like they knew.
Her dad. It's weird that her dad would spend all this money.
Yes.
He was sure she was dead.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you have an issue with pronouns.
I'm just going to say they from now on for everyone.
That would be better.
So they didn't know that they were dead. And if they knew that they were dead, they spent $3 million.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder if they, I'm speaking now of the father, and the rest of the family really, did know where she was. Which gets to your theory is that she ran off. And they knew she ran off. And whether they did or not, it doesn't matter. She could have ran off. They certainly suspected it. We know they suspected it. They went to Europe to
look for her.
Griskin, but very likely to also look for her. Thinking that she's with him. So it's probably the most popular theory out there is that she ran off of her own accord. She was, you know, tired of her pretty little life. But she hungered for adventure, for freedom, to stop being made fun of for writing. And you know, she wants to get out of her little gilded cage and live on her own. Plus, remember, her family was being kind of dicks about it. So it does track a little bit.
But it does. But how did she do this?
Yeah, I know.
Because she didn't have any money.
She would have had to secret away a pretty decent chunk of change for later retrieval and got it and put it somewhere and got it, which she could have. But it would have been difficult. She would have, to hide away some necessities, some clothes and things like
that.
At least according to her mother said that everything looked to be in her closet. She did arrange to be alone, it seems like, maybe on that last day by telling her friends she's shopping with their mom and telling her mom, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You don't need to go with me. Maybe. But if she was secret, she did then was very public. Remember, she went and she bought the chocolate on her family's account. She bought the book on her family's account so they could track where she had gone. And that doesn't... Just take
off.
Why
not?
I don't know. Time's of the essence. Why are you meandering around for hours walking and buying chocolates and books and things like that when you want to get away from your family and get out of New York City as fast as you can, you would think?
Well, maybe she knew she had time.
Why? Just
I don't know.
Why would you wait around? Your idea is to escape. You're going to leave the city.
Because she was rendezvousing.
She would have, well.
With an accomplice, somebody that was helping her.
Yeah.
And,
still seems weird.
Then
leave the house. If you're going to meet him at 1:30, leave the house at 1, not leave the house at 11. And you are for 3 hours, you're in the area shopping and you don't leave contact with your friend until 2 p.m.
Because
why?
Because once she is gone and declared missing, maybe she wants her parents to think something else had happened to her.
So that's why she said, if she, I'm gonna go through Central
if
Park.
She never was on the route she was supposed to be on, and you know, and she probably knew her parents were going to hire detectives or whatever.
Maybe, but this seems like there's better ways. Like you could have gone into Central Park, ripped off a chunkier navy serge dress and left it somewhere to be found or something like that. You know, even nicked yourself and put some blood on it.
I think she wasn't thinking of any of these things. I think she just, I think the fact that she actually went and bought some chocolate and some books is of no evidentiary value one way or the other.
I think it indicates she was acting very normally. But okay, then what does she do? She lives the rest of her life in what? The West? Overseas?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a good question.
A riverfront merchant. I don't know what river they're referring to, but there's a story on a source about this. A riverfront merchant, quote unquote, claimed, quote, a mysterious young woman of apparent refinement, end quote, tried to trade him some of her jewelry in exchange for men's clothes that she presumed she was going to wear as a disguise. So that's a story that indicates, okay, if that's true, horrible planning. No planning whatsoever was involved. It seems on the spur of the moment, obviously. Yes. And that came out after it came out. That was for sure someone looking for the reward money. But I just love that they just say a riverfront merchant. You're seriously not going to tell us which river.
Yeah.
There's two just in New York City. It could be the Mississippi for all I know. Come on, sources. So that for sure never happened. She would not have done this. And she would have been very well planned, and she would have had everything she needed. Not, oh, shit, I guess I better get some boys' clothes. Here's my ring. That just makes no sense.
Yeah.
So one writer who's written about this case said, she wrote a book, and she talked to a lot of the modern offshoots of the Arnold family, people of the Arnold family, and said, like, it was never talked about, you know.
Yeah.
No one ever talked about this. You had to really, like, especially people who are almost contemporaneous, they just would not talk about the most recent, the current generation. There's a couple of people are interested in it, but they don't know a ton about it any more than we do. But according to these folks, according to this writer, that she came to the conclusion that, Dorothy disappeared of her own accord. I don't know. Okay. Keith's looking for you almost immediately. The Pinkertons are searching high and wide for you. Your newspaper, every newspaper in the country has your likeness in it and your description in it.
It is weird.
Nothing comes of this except that very implausible riverfront merchant story. Literally no evidence whatsoever that she did disappear on her own accord ever came from all these intense scrutiny.
Yeah.
That seems weird.
Yeah, it's all weird.
There were, however, claims from women really throughout the country, and it went on for years, by the way, that, oh, it's me. I'm Dorothy.
Of course.
I'm the last heiress. So, I mean,
I want to go live with these people that clearly don't give a shit about me.
So that's not realistic. All false confessions. It's funny about, you know, all these famous people who supposedly, like Jesse James, you know, you have like 15 people would later say they're Jesse James, right? By definition, all but one of them has to be lying. Think about that for a second. So people say, oh, well, they, you know, all these different confessions and they all seem so plausible, or, oh, you don't know. Yes, I do know, because only maximum one of those persons, there's always multiple people, can be telling the truth, which obviously very, very high probability, 100% of them are lying.
Exactly.
It's the same with Dorothy Arnold. You know, a lot of these women, women's in Los Angeles, all over the country are saying, I'm Dorothy Arnold. They have to be lying, except possibly one, and there's no reason to believe any of them. There's certainly none of them had any compelling, you know, obviously, all it would take would be to go to New York and say, it's me.
Exactly, so yes.
The holes in this story, that the idea that she disappeared of her own accord, that, you know, she was never seen, she was never reported. She became pretty notorious after her disappearance, but, I mean, someone's going to rat you out for the money. You've set up shop with your boy toy in, you know, St. Louis, whatever. Someone's, you know, a neighbor of wherever you work or something like that.
Yeah.
Someone's going to notice you. It just seems super weird and impossible that happened and she was never noticed it. Also, about the money. I mean, I hate to say it. She grew up very pampered. Yeah. She's really going to live the rest of her life.
She wouldn't know how to not live that way.
Pioneer, you know, in the West or something like that. That just makes weird. She would not function well, I wouldn't think.
That does make weird.
Yeah.
And I think...
What?
You catch that?
I can't hear you.
I said that does make weird.
That does make weird, Carrie. No, it totally makes weird. Carrie, this show's called Weird World, so it's fine. Just work in the word weird as much as you can. It's fine. So it does make weird. Go on.
I said it because you said it.
I did? Yes. Oh, I didn't know.
And then you just go, yeah. Yeah, I think I don't even remember what makes weird, but I think
a lot of things make weird.
She probably died.
Yeah.
But how she it's never discovered that she died, I don't know. That's the what part. Makes it weird. But
so the other thing is that you forget, if she did do this, she was a monster. Because she knew her family was worried sick of her. She got along with the family. I know they were teasing her about her short story, but she was very close to her
we don't know
her mom.
Here's
that'd
the thing.
Be a monstrous thing to do.
We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And the way the family behaved, I have questions.
I know.
About really how much they loved her and wanted her back.
I would say this. It's just another check against the voluntary disappeared, because it would be pretty terrible. We don't know anything about some horrible, horrible, deep, dark secret about how they treated her. We do know that the I am safe postcard was bullshit. Because did you catch that, what I said? It was postmarked in New York City.
Yeah.
Like a month something after.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
If she did disappear, she sure as hell didn't stay in New York City.
Yeah.
So, and here's the thing. Why would she even have to do this secretly at all? Just leave. You're 25. Exactly. You're an adult. If you're not relying on them for their money, go.
Which lends more credence to they weren't the nice, wholesome, rich family that you seem to think they are.
Or it lends credence to the idea that she didn't disappear of her own.
Either or. Also, more evidence against this family is that you said they would never talk of her.
Well, no, because it was a sort of a black mark in the family, and it was a scandal for the family.
Who gives a shit? I would care more, and I would miss my darling daughter more than I would care. By that time, you said it lasted generations.
No,
the social. So what? Your daughter disappeared. She's gone.
The people who are contemporaneous with her wouldn't talk about it. The later generations didn't know anything about it to talk about.
Yeah,
it.
So because it was never talked about.
Yeah, her cousins, let's say.
Yeah,
her brothers. So Dorothy was never found. There's never any trace or hint of her now for well over a century. Newspapers ran headlines speculating for years about what happened to Dorothy. It was a story for a long time.
Yeah.
There were sightings and things like that we talked about all the time. There was hoaxes, too, for a while. The most serious flare-up afterward was in 1921, so about 11 years after. The Captain John H. Ayers, he was the head of the city's Missing Persons Bureau, and so I technically in charge of the case. He went to the press, and he said that the case had been solved. This is 1921. He says, quote, "All that I can say is that it has been solved by the department. Dorothy Arnold is no longer listed as a missing person," which isn't true.
Right.
But, end quote. That's weird. He otherwise was totally sparse with any kind of details. Media saying, what are you talking about? Explain. He wouldn't explain. He said, quote, "Her parents, relatives, and friends who had been led to follow in all directions, clues sent in multitudes of letters suddenly ceased their activity." So I don't know what's, end quote. I'm not completely sure what he meant.
I think he mixed it up with a different case.
I mean, 10 years later, and he says, well, they're not looking for her anymore. No shit, they're not looking for her anymore. And that means they must know that she left of her own accord, so the case is closed.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, it feels like another thing for the New York City authorities, law enforcement authorities, to wash their hands of the case.
Yeah.
Even now, 10 years later. So it's very strange. An Arnold lawyer vehemently denied that the case was closed. He said, quote, "Captain Ayers seems to intimate that the mystery of Dorothy Arnold's disappearance has been solved and that the family, for some reason, has kept the solution a secret. The whole thing is a damned lie," end quote. That response worked because the next day, Captain Ayers says, whoa, 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 whoa. I was misconstrued. I was poorly phrased. You guys got it wrong. I never meant anything of the sake of that. It's all just a big misunderstanding, maybe even a slip of the tongue. You take it out of context. I was misquoted. Whatever. Please stop talking about it. I'm going to lose my job. That's what he was really saying. So he backed off immediately when the lawyer said, no, we think she's still missing and the case should still be open. Yeah. And it is. So I don't know if there's a misunderstanding or again, it's just the police wanted to be done with it. But Francis, her father, died on April 6th, the next year, 1922.
Wow.
And in his will, he explicitly left Dorothy out of it. He said in the codicil that, quote, I'm satisfied that she is not alive, end quote. So essentially,
yeah,
she can't inherit money because she's dead. So he, to his death,
yeah,
he believed she was, she'd been killed. Her mom, Mary Frances, she still, Mary Frances? Is that her name? Did I say that's her name? I don't know.
You said her name is Mary.
Yeah.
The dad's name is Francis.
It's Arnold. So it's not Mary Frances.
Her name probably isn't Mary Frances.
Yeah, let's go with Mary. I'm going to start that over again. Her mom, Mary, still thought that Dorothy might be alive. I think she thought she may have been kidnapped, which is kind of delusional because they never got any legitimate ransom request. But Mary died in 1928, and she left the same codicil declaring her daughter dead. John Keith, the young lawyer who had been originally searching for her, thought that Dorothy had committed suicide due to the writing setback. So you have, you know, one parent thinking kidnapped, the other parent thinking murdered, the person very, very close to the case thinking suicide, her boyfriend of a sort thinking suicide, but most of her friends thinking it was not suicide. Years later, journalists looked for a quote from the police on the 25th anniversary of Dorothy's disappearance. It's 1935. And police said, well, we still get occasional tips on this case. And they said there was actually one just 6 months ago that the Missing Persons Bureau actually looked into. People had said they'd been seeing her visit some store on 5th and 53rd Street. Dorothy Arnold, now 25 years old, it should be 50, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And so they went and they sort of staked out that store. They waited hours and hours and hours. And they never saw any hide nor hair of the 50-year-old.
How would they recognize her?
I know. But they were still checking it out 25 years later. And that was it, though. It kind of faded after that. Dorothy did this day. You know, there's no body. There's no nothing. So I tend toward the solution has to have something. It has to explain the lack of a body.
Yeah.
So then you get run away. You get abortion and body disposed.
Yeah.
But you also have potentially a murderer, but not ruffians, but like a serial killer type of a murderer who would dispose of the body. She's not a serial killer like he thought, which I think is a slur against her. And I mean, those things tend to be the ones that I think of. I know that's a pretty big menu of possibilities, but you've got to explain the lack of body. So what's your take?
Well, my take is abortion or...
Yeah.
She's an absolute genius and she disappeared herself. I have a question though. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming you don't have an answer or you might have said, any idea what her siblings thought happened to her?
I don't know.
Because, you know, lots of times sisters talk to each other. Yeah. So if she had been pregnant,
yeah,
maybe her sister knew something.
Yeah.
You know?
I tend toward the abortion, and I think the family suspected that.
Yeah.
And that would explain...
It explains everything.
It does. Explains why the father says, no, she's dead. No, she's dead. Because, yes, she is dead, but...
You don't want to say how.
Not the way she... Yeah. The scandal ensues in the way she really died. Attacked in Central Park does not.
This also makes me hate the family, because if they knew she was pregnant and probably going to seek an abortion... Mm-hmm. I'm sure wealthy people could have found a safe abortion back in those days.
There was no safe abortion back in those days. I mean, this kind of guy.
Don't tell me there were not good doctors who would
do it for the high society. She's got to pay off from her allowance.
No. Right. I'm saying that her family knows about. If they suspect that this is what was happening to her... They could have actually helped her. And I know people didn't do that in those days.
No,
but
she never went to the family. If that's happened, she never went to the family.
Then why would they even think that was a possibility?
Because it was always thought of as a very likely possibility. It fits all the facts. It explains the disappearance of her body. It explains what happened to her. Also, because total speculation on my part, but it seems like if that's what happened, the mom didn't know about it. But the dad did. So the detectives at some point found out about it, went to the dad and only the dad and told him what happened. And he says,
I think the dad suspected it from the get-go.
Very possibly. I think he also
If he did suspect it, he expected it immediately.
Well, that's not necessarily true because remember, he didn't say that what he said to the police until 6 weeks after when they went public. So in that time is when he, if the speculation is correct, he found out she probably had an abortion and was and died.
Yeah.
Sometime during that 6 weeks. And that's the time when the Pinkertons are all over the place. Keith didn't find out about it, and he was probably never told, but the Pinkertons probably found out about it and told Francis Arnold, and he said, she's dead, you know. But he still, for his wife, he still continued searching for her and spent all this money to search for her because his wife was never told about it. He never told his wife about it. And probably didn't tell his son either.
Yeah.
So, because
he let John them go to Europe and look for her. Yeah.
Yeah. If I had to take a speculative guess, I'd say she died in a botched abortion. Uh-huh. Her body was burned. It could very well have been Dr. Meredith's, furnace. And near Pittsburgh, the near Pittsburgh part fits because it's Griscom who got her pregnant. Griscom, of course, is going to look for her because he doesn't want to get involved in that. That would be a serious felony at the time. It was Griscom's baby. He helped her get to Pittsburgh for the abortion, to near Pittsburgh as Bellevue for the abortion. And Dr. Meredith.
When did he leave for Europe? I thought he left.
He left for Europe just a couple weeks before she did, but it's possible. I mean, who knows? Did they write letters to one another or something like that? Somehow, it's not sure. It could have been completely different from this whole Bellevue thing. Could have been just she found out about an abortion clinic in New York, and the same thing happened.
I find it harder to believe that she got all the way to Pittsburgh completely undetected.
That's probably true. Well, I mean, that might explain the walking around the city for 3 hours, though, because you're supposed to meet somebody somewhere. Yeah. And you just went, I don't know. But that's the mystery of this story, though. None of that makes sense.
Right.
None of it's a sure thing. We don't have an absolute ironclad answer to it. We just have probabilities. I think the best fit is the abortion.
Yeah, I do too.
The second best fit is probably she left on her own accord. I find that a distant second because I just don't see
for all the same reasons
living like that the rest of her life.
Yeah,
and escaping anyone ever seeing her and wanting to get reward money.
Yeah,
you know, so that doesn't make sense. And then the last one that is that explains the body is this murder again. It couldn't have been ruffians because the body would have been left in Central Park. But did she run afoul of an early serial killer who dumped her body? It's not impossible, but that's a distant third. Things like murder by ruffians or suicide, I think, are very unlikely. Suicide part, you have to a little bit if she did get on a boat and jump into the river. That's not completely impossible. So suicide's in there, too.
But then people would have seen her somewhere along the way.
Or even on the boat, right? How easy is it to... I mean, ferries would be very crowded, I would think.
Yeah.
Even an ocean liner, someone. I mean, you could sneak out at 2 a.m., I guess, and, you know, right? And jump slip over the side.
From
silently.
Some kind of boat, probably not a ferry. I don't think ferries are
probably not a ferry, but an ocean liner. If she did pay cash, use a fake name, and, you know, out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Although, why would you need to stay undetected?
It almost seems like you want to be not detective. And if that you take that thing, oh, mother will always think it's an accident. You disappearing wouldn't seem like an accident, would it?
Yeah.
I think that just sounds more ominous than it really is. I don't know what she's referring to.
That's the thing. We don't know the context of that. So
And if she's referring, if that meant I'm going to kill myself, she's telling George, and George Griscom knows she's going to kill herself, and he never talks about that.
Which is, I don't think so.
And she tells him she was on the outs with him. Why is she telling him that she's going to commit? So he seems like he's not the person that she can find that to. So I don't buy the suicide thing, although it's still a possibility.
And if it was in part due to her relationship with him failing, she would say, this is your fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or she'd be confided in someone else.
Yeah.
And about that. Positive.
That's why I wonder about the sister.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She didn't have a sister. They're all brothers.
Wasn't she going to buy a dress for her sister's?
Right. She had a sister that debutante ball. That's right. She had one sister, two brothers. That's right. But her sister was younger than her, and I think several years younger than her.
Well, if she was
like 18-ish at debutante ball, I'm thinking. So I don't know. Do 25-year-old confide in their 18-year-old little sister?
Maybe.
Maybe a bit more. I don't know. That's not a. That shouldn't hold us back from that. I'm gonna go. abortion.
Yeah, possible.
And that's the story of Dorothy Arnold, one of the strangest disappearances in the history of New York City.
Very weird is what I would say about that.
That's what make weird is what Gary would probably say about that. Well, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the two-part story of the Dorothy Arnold disappearance. We'll be back next week with something from Carrie. I don't know what.
Neither does Carrie.
All right. Sounds fun. You probably, I probably won't know until you start talking. And it'll probably be something different than what you told me you're going to talk about. All right. See ya.
Thanks for listening. Bye.